van Uppington tot Grootdrink, Groblershoop tot Keimoes, Riemvasmaak tot Rooiputs. Radiostasie van die Suidlanders, Radio Grootervier.
Ons het geluister na Appel se God se Land, Christian Baartman vir mekaar en JJ Rachel met die Afrikaner Hart. Wel, goeienaand en welkom weer eens by Radio Grootrivier en ons asemrowende reeks waarmee ons besig is, die Suidlanders gesels. Met hierdie reeks gaan ons gesels met die departementshoofde en leiers van die Suidlanders om 'n bietjie meer perspektief te kry oor wat agter die skerms van hierdie organisasie aan die gang is en vanaand gesels ons weer eens vir die derde maal nou al met Simon Roche. Hy is die nasionale departementshoof van buitelands en vanaand se onderwerp is Oekraïne. Kom ons kyk gou of ons vir Simon aan die lyn kan kry. Hallo.
Hallo Marius.
Hey Simon, hoe gaan dit vanaand met jou?
Alright, dankie en met jou Marius.
Nee, dit gaan baie goed.
Ek is baie bly om dit te hoor. I've just got a little bit of a cold, so excuse me if I have to ask you if I can mute my microphone to clear my sinuses at some stage.
Nee, is nie glad nie 'n probleem nie. So, ja, Simon, ek het nou klaar vir die luisteraars gesê, vanaand se onderwerp is Oekraïne en Rusland. En ja, ek kan nie wag om daarin in te spring nie.
Yeah, it's a very, very interesting subject.
Ja, so kom ons begin by die begin Simon en dit is die hoofstroom media wil vir ons laat glo dat Rusland hierdie groot boosdoeners is en dat hulle hierdie ongegronde redes het om oorlog te begin maak het in Oekraïne en hulle nou in te val. Kan jy net so vinnig bietjie perspektief gee oor hoekom het Rusland vir Oekraïne ingeval?
Yeah, in the early 90s when the Soviet Union was collapsing, the Americans were very involved in Russia. They sent economists and advisors and what have you over there. And in that process, the Russians said, look, the Soviet Union is breaking up. One thing that we're afraid of is that you're going to take advantage of this to push NATO closer to Russia. And the Americans said, under no circumstances will that happen. But under two different presidents, various reassurances were given, and in one case it was reduced to writing. I've read the document myself. So they promised that they would not take advantage of this thing. If you just imagine quickly, let's say I'm from the Hells Angels Motorcycle Club and you from the Three Heads of Death Motorcycle Club. And we are terrible rivals. And I hear that you're going to move in next door to me. I might say, listen, guys, this can never happen. Never mind Marius's rights. Never mind that he can live wherever he likes. Never mind nothing. In the last 20 years, we've killed 30 of one another's gang members. Are you mad? And in the same way, people say, well, Ukraine has got its sovereign rights as an independent country. Yes. But in the real world, you don't allow NATO to be in Ukraine, to be on your doorstep with intercontinental ballistic missiles pointed at Moscow. It doesn't work that way, not in the real world. So a few years after the promises were given, NATO expanded. Once, twice, there were three waves of expansion. And the Russians kept on warning that this is going to lead to trouble. Anybody who wants to should look up Vladimir Putin's speech at the 2007 Munich Security Conference, where he warned of this. It's on YouTube. Then in 2004, Viktor Yanukovych won the Ukraine elections, and then they were declared to be unfair and what have you, and so they redid them and he lost. A few years later, he ran again and he won. And nobody complained about the results. You know, it was very closely monitored. And the Russians sent a delegation saying, listen, we hear that you guys are joining the European Union. we don't want you to do that. If you do it, then we're going to have to take you out of our special deal. Because you know that our special deal was set up, yes, to be a counterbalance to the European Union. They're our rival. So he said, fair enough, let me look at the numbers. And he got back to them and he said, overwhelmingly, over 80% of our trade is with you, Russia. So if that's the deal, that you don't want us to go over to your competition, then we won't do that. And the CIA and the U.S. Foreign Services, the Foreign Ministry, the State Department created the Maidan Revolution. Independence Square, it became known as Euromaidan, where there was huge in 2013, we are now, into 2014, huge rallies that were paid for by the U.S. State Department and the CIA. This is very well recorded, and you can find it on the internet. And Viktor Yanukovych was forced from office. And from that point, Ukraine has been solidly in the Western / EU / NATO camp. And shortly after that, they banned the Russian language for use under certain most circumstances at school, for instance, and in official documents and what have you. And so two oblasts, which is like a province of Ukraine that are like 95% Russian, declared independence. They said, there's no way we're going to go for this. We are Russian. Now we're not allowed to use our language in the workplace. Our children are not allowed to use our language. We must use another language to fill in a form. And indeed, all of eastern Ukraine is Russian. Now, this should be seen against the backdrop of certain very important things. Russia, the Russian people, come from Ukraine. We know from certain sciences, one of the sciences is called idiolect. It's the study of language. We know for a scientific fact that the Russian people come from the Pripyat marshes of Ukraine. So, sentimentally, Ukraine is not Russia's backyard. Ukraine is Russia's Voorkamer.
Yeah.
It's not like, that it's very much more complicated. Anyway, during the Soviet Revolution, the Soviet times, in 1932, there was a very bad famine in the Soviet countries, if you like, in the Soviet Union. And in parallel to that, the kulaks, the landowning peasants of Ukraine, hated this revolution. And as Alexander Solzhenitsyn says, the great, 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 great Russian author, the Russian Revolution was never a revolution of ethnic Russians. It was a Jewish revolution. Whether you're pro-Jewish or anti-Jewish is not the point. The point is that over 85%, 85.6 if I remember the number correctly, of the leadership of the Russian Revolution were Jewish. They just were. And the Ukrainians didn't like the fact that the Russians and these other people that they perceived to be aliens were forcing them to accept the revolution because the kulaks in Ukraine were very wealthy. They were peasants, but they owned land. And as the joke goes, if you want a herd of cattle in Ukraine, take two boots and throw them in the field and come back a couple of months later. Meaning, if you throw old leather on Ukrainian soil, the cows will grow out of it. Yeah. It's very the most fertile land practically in the world. There are three regions in the world that have such fertile land. So they were, what must we do revolution for? We're eating, we're fat, we're happy. So what Stalin did in this famine was, he took all of the Ukrainian grain and he starved to death in what's known as the Holodomor, between 7 and 10 million people. So it's the biggest thing of its kind in history. There's nothing to compare to it in terms of genocide and so on. So when the Nazis invaded a few years later, we go from 1932 to 1941, the Ukrainians greeted them with what they call the traditional offeranda of bread and salt. Meaning they didn't greet them with gifts. They greeted them with something that is semi-religious. They saw the Nazis as the best thing that ever happened in the world. And so you have a situation where 75 years later, 83 years later, the Ukrainians have a romantic sympathy for the Nazis as the people who broke the neck of the revolution, or took the yoke, broke the yoke that sat on their necks, the yoke of the revolution. So when they kicked out the Russian language in 2014, and these two oblasts, Russian oblasts, declared independence, people took one side or they took the other side of the story. And the same with the invasion. People have taken one side or they've taken the other side. In fact, we should take neither side, because both sides have a good argument. The Ukrainians are saying, we hate these Russians and what they did to us. They starved all of our people to death. Hmm. Now, if the Engerkak, for example, or an ethnic group, the Afrikaners, starved all of my people to death 80 years ago, there's a good chance that I would hate those people, you know, with that religion or of that ethnicity. It's a normal thing. It's not abnormal behavior. The Ukrainians are perfectly right to have this historical hatred of Russian oppression and the incredible suffering that they've been through at the hands of the Russians. But the Russians are also right to say, hey, you can't come put, move in next to me here. That's not what nuclear powers do. Not in the real world.
Yeah.
So it's gone on to the point where the argument has become all muddied, but really it's something that we should keep our noses out of. I cover it on my WhatsApp groups, as you know, every single day, and I have some sympathy for the Russian point of view because they're not being controlled by the internationalists, the people without a home. They seem to be opposed to that, but it's not that I think the Russians are my chummies. You know, I know Ezekiel 38. I know that in the end times, the Russians are going to be my mortal enemy. And I know that the Russians are married to the ANC. And I know that the Russians have funded the MK party. We know that from all of the revelations of Andrei Pienaar that have since been verified by Dr. Andrew Turton and Professor R.W. Johnson. They're not my chummy. I like the fact that they're blixaming the internationalists, the globalists, but that doesn't mean that they're in the right, entirely in the right.
Yeah.
As far as Crimea is concerned, it's a slightly different thing. That has been Russia's Black Sea port, its only warm water port, since before the USA was a country. It was first Sevastopol. You know, Crimea has a few ports, but the Sevastopol port was built in 1783. The U.S. Declaration of 1776 of independence was in 1776, but they still, by 1783, didn't have a constitution to define the country, who's included, who's not, what is a state, what isn't a state. So they weren't even a proper country when Russia, that was an acknowledged part of Russia. So when all the dramas went down, Ukraine had been the custodian of, since the 1950s, since the time of Khrushchev, of Crimea. So Russia said, no, this is becoming a bit of a joke. So they sent in army groups. They called a whole lot of international observers. They held elections. They verified the results of the elections. The Crimean people said, we want to be part of Russia. Russia said, right, that's the end of the story. We don't care who says what about what. We want a warm water port, and we want back what was ours, because it was taken away from Russia by a Ukrainian, Nikita Khrushchev, the guy who followed Stalin, was a Ukrainian. And he said, within the Soviet Union now, we're talking, he said that within the Soviet Union, Crimea should be part of Ukraine and not part of Russia. And Russia said, no, we've had enough of these shenanigans. It's been ours for 300 years, or longer, in fact, going on for 400. And we're taking it back. We don't care what anybody says. The people have voted. So this whole thing is quite nuanced. There's quite a lot to it. But the net result is that we now have a special military operation, which is not a special military operation. It's an outright war, Marius.
Ja. Nee, dit is so. Dankie, Simon. Ja, excuse toch. En wat baie mense nie besef nie, is soos jy sê, Rusland het vir jare en jare lang kans gegee en vir NATO gesê, luister jy, hou op, ons het 'n ooreenkoms gehad, moenie dit doen nie. So, dis baie moeilik as jy met iemand gesels wat net die hoofstroom media luister en glo om oor hierdie dinge te praat. Ek sê altyd mense, man, gaan doen 'n bietjie jou eie ondersoek oor wat is werklik waar aan die gang. Maar, excuse toch, Simon, jy het laas week gesê, daar is dalk 'n paar dinge wat jy gaan met ons meedeel, wat die luisteraars dalk 'n bietjie gaan ontstel of so. Ek weet nie of jy nog kan onthou nie. Is daar iets spesifieks wat jy wou gedeel het?
Well, let me begin with this one. It's going to be very controversial to some people. But Marius, if you can explain this to me, I'll give you $100. The Ukrainian Nazis are led by 4 Jews.
Wow.
The most senior leadership of Ukraine is 4 Jewish people.
Yeah.
But the Ukrainians are Nazis. The whole story stinks. It stinks like a fish from the head.
Yeah.
Right from the head, the story stinks. I'm not saying you must be anti-Jewish or pro-Nazi, but how on earth do you sell a story like that to me and expect me to say, oh, that makes great sense, you know? Another thing is, there are, and I have piles and piles and piles of these things. I follow certain people who believe or who claim that they are behind all of the great events in the world today.
Yeah.
For instance, in 1952, 10th of January, in, heavens above, was it in Belgrade? It might have been, no, it was in... Oh, goodness me, I'll think now. Anyway, a very secret group of people got together and they described how they were going to destroy the world. And there's a recording of this that still exists. It's a known thing. I'm not saying something that, you know, some wild and woolly claim. This is something people don't know, but it is known in the right circles. And they got together and they said, we're going to retaliate for World War II by injecting the world with a poison. It's going to take us years and years and years, decades, but that's going to be our response. Now, the same people believe that they are controlling all of the great events of the world today. And you can see them on YouTube's. I'll give you some references. You won't understand very much unless you have a working knowledge of Yiddish and Hebrew. I don't speak Yiddish or Hebrew, but I have what you might call a working knowledge. If I hear a word and the most commonly used words, I understand. So, Daniel Gladstein, Yitzhak Breitowitz, Yitzhak Mizrahi, and Ephraim Palvanov. People who are listening who think maybe I'm talking through my hat can verify this for themselves. And they have explained at very great length in hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of videos that there's a very short time left for them to incite World War III, to cause it to happen, to complete it, to clean up afterwards. There's a seven-month cleanup period that is mentioned in the Old Testament. Before September 2026. Now, you don't have to agree with that. You could say, oh, that's a whole lot of claptrap. But they believe it. And they say, this is what is motivating us to do this today. Why do we have to do it now? Likewise, they say that China is mentioned throughout the Old Testament. And they draw comparisons, numerological comparisons. You can look it up. Ephraim Polvanov. Ephraim Polvanov. Easy. They say that China has to invade Taiwan in the year of the snake, which begins on the 29th of January next year. So they're saying, don't worry, the world doesn't know when this is going to happen. The Christians don't know. JC, that's what they call us. JT, as Itzhak Mizrahi always says, because he lisps. They don't know, but we know what's going on, because we're behind it, and we provide the timelines and the what have you. So the simple reality is that these guys have made it very, very clear why they chose Ukraine, to get back to the point, the controversial point. And I have at least 12 videos on my telephone of these guys saying, we chose Ukraine because Simon belongs to the Hell's Angels, Marius belongs to the three heads of death, and we, the smoking rattlesnakes motorcycle club, those are our two enemies, our worst enemies, the three heads of death and the Hell's Angels. What is the cleverest way to act in your own interests if you are a member of the smoking rattlesnakes? Is to get the three heads of death and the Hell's Angels to go to war. They say these two nations, the Russians and the Ukrainians, historically have been our greatest enemies. We engineered this war. We manipulated it. We ensured that it would happen according to a certain timeline under certain circumstances. And that's why it delights me so much every time that the Russians clap them in the face. But I don't believe for one minute that the Russians are my buddies. That's just, you know, not to be arrogant, but that's stupid. It's written in black and white in the Bible that in the end times they will be my greatest enemy. And as a matter of interest to you, I'll tell you how these guys separate the entities. Basically, they say, these rabbis, that there are 70 nations in the world, the proto-nations, the first nations. Every nation beneath is just so if you say there's 700 nations in the world today, for instance, or 7,000 or 70,000, make up your own number, that they all derive from the 70 first nations. And they fall into two broad categories. Those that have the mentality of Ishmael, and those that have the mentality of Esau. Now, I know there'll be listeners who'll be saying, no, but we're the true Israelites. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what we believe. If my dog believes that now is the right time to walk in the garden or to drink water or what have you, it doesn't matter what I think. And they believe that they have to destroy those 70 nations and then subdue them. And that in 35 of them have the mentality of Ishmael, and 35 of them have the mentality of Esau. And so in broad terms, what that means is that they want to destroy Western Europe, the 35 nations in a very tight cluster that come from Western Europe. So that's Canada, the USA, Australia, New Zealand, the whites of South Africa, and, of course, Western Europe, Ireland, Great Britain, France, Spain, Germany, Portugal, Italy, Netherlands, Belgium. And their cunning plan is to get those peoples, those Western peoples, to go against the northern, eastern, and southern peoples. And that is the hugely, hugely, hugely controversial thing that distresses so many people. But I'm not saying, I've done research and I've come to this conclusion, chaps, you must believe me. I'm just regurgitating what I can prove with hundreds of videos. The top people in that elite group are saying, I can't read Hebrew, I can't speak Hebrew, I can't read Yiddish, and I can't speak Yiddish. I haven't done any research. All I've done is sat in front of the television for the past 3 years, watching these guys speak in English, you know, using Yiddish and Hebrew and what have you. Explain, why are we doing this? Why did we inject the world? Why are we creating the war in Ukraine? Why are we implementing the Hannibal Doctrine in Israel, the Israel-Gaza conflict? The Hannibal Doctrine being the doctrine that it's okay if you kill a whole bunch of your people to save a whole lot more. And just like we said that, you know, you're not to be unkind to anybody, but you're an idiot if you believe that it makes sense that 10 million Nazis are being led to the slaughter by 4 Jews. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That story stinks from the head.
Yeah.
And the same with the invasion of Gaza. The Israeli army was stood down. We know that. We've all got social media. We've all got Twitter and WhatsApp and Telegrams and what have you. We've all seen the insiders come out and say, hey, whoa, guys, before you believe all this bulldust, let me tell you that we were stood down. And then the other videos of the people explaining how they were told not to move for 7 hours while the invasion occurred. Then all of the other videos where they describe it's not humanly possible to cross out of Gaza without us seeing you. Why is that? Why is that? Because we have sensors, and those sensors can pick up desert rats. Why is that? Because with modern technology, a drone can be as small as a bird or as small as a desert rat.
Yeah.
So we have to have that technology. It's not humanly possible. We have the former president of Israel saying that Hamas was founded by us. We control it from top to bottom. It's our agents. Former prime minister of Israel saying the same thing. Former IDF, head of the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, saying the same thing. Former head of Mossad saying the same thing. Right. So you completely own Hamas, but you didn't have good enough information that it was planning a huge invasion. But besides that, just for you and me, ordinary, sensible people, how on earth did hundreds of those folks, besides the other mediums that were used to get in the invasion, motorbikes and rubber duckies, and besides those, can you please explain to me how hundreds of guys from Hamas were practicing microlight flying lessons, and nobody done? I mean, the story is too stupid for words.
Yeah.
So what has come out over time is that, and now, by the way, some very, very, very mainstream people are talking about this, but they're doing so very carefully, because in the USA, for instance, you can get locked up for saying anything bad about Israel. It's considered anti-Semitism. So if you say, I went on holiday to Israel, the service was awful, they ripped me off. There's not as much to see there as they say. You make a big song and dance, and you say that you were harassed at the airport. The police and the security personnel manning the checkpoints are all a bunch of, you know what? That can be construed as anti-Semitism. And this is literally the case. I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah.
But even John Mearsheimer, Professor John Mearsheimer, the leading brain in the world on the political philosophy called realism, did an interview today in which he said the simple reality is that it looks as if the Hannibal Doctrine was implemented, where the Israelis instigated an attack against themselves so that they could retaliate, so that they could generate this phenomenal war. Now, I'll tell you a very, very, very interesting thing. We're going a bit off the subject of Ukraine, but they are connected. It's, you know, the people who claim to be behind all of this are saying, yes, of course they're connected. What do you think? Today, a report came out of Israel. The rabbi, who is the minister for religious affairs in Israel, announced that they are preparing for mass casualties. They've been informed that the Israelis are going to invade Lebanon up to the Litani River. Now, there's more to that story, but I'll try not to take up too much of your time. Over the weekend, the U.S. Congress passed a law under which all males between the ages of 18 and 26 have to register for selective service, which I'm going to just simplify. Basically means you are registering potentially for conscription. Every single channel that's covering this is saying, we know what that means. You are registering for conscription. Now, there is more chance of me winning tonight's lotto with the Powerball than there is of a U.S. Congress passing such a law in an election year.
Yeah.
It's never happened, and it will never happen again. But they did it. The only explanation for such an incredible, phenomenal thing, telling all your voters that they're going to die somewhere, you're lining them up for conscription, or that their sons are going to die somewhere, is if you know that war is imminent, imminent, imminent.
Yeah.
That you do it before an election. Yeah. 4 months before an election. Nobody does that. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's the amazing thing that's happened this year.
Yeah. En dan gister het Noord-Korea en Rusland hulle verdedigingsooreenkoms met mekaar geteken. Dit speel ook seker 'n groot rol in hierdie hele prentjie van World War 3 wat besig is om sterk aan die gang te kom. Want Noord-Korea en Rusland bondgenote nou en het dan nou 'n verdedigingsooreenkoms met mekaar geteken dat hulle mekaar sal beskerm. So ek dink dis ook nog 'n groot aspek as mens kyk na 'n stukkie in die legkaart van wat nou aan die gang is met die wêreld derde wêreldoorlog wat begin.
Ja, yeah, you're dead right. And Viktor Orban says, you know, the president of Hungary is a very conservative Christian guy. He reckons that the NATO is building and has in fact built, but hasn't made operational, 3 huge bases in Eastern Europe that will be transfer bases between NATO and Ukraine. And the Serbian president, Vucic, says that their intelligence, which is presumably Russian intelligence because they're an ally of Russia, but he says it's a matter of fact that there will be all-out war within 3 months. Now, all-out war means, as you rightly say, Marius, World War III. So it's getting very, very,
yeah,
very hot.
Yeah. Nee, dit is definitief so. Simon, ek weet nie of daar nog iets is wat jy dalk belangrik geag het nie, wat jy wou bygesit het nie. Anderster gaan ons eers vir vanavond klaarmaak, maar sê maar of daar dalk nog iets belangrik is wat jy graag wil sê.
No, I think we've done a good job of giving a brief overview, just about 35 minutes long, of what's cooking in Ukraine. And we've also introduced another subject that people might not have thought about or been familiar with, and that is the huge connection with the war in Israel.
Yeah.
And that there's even a doctrine, that they have a doctrine on how to, you know, kill your own people to get a war going, and how the people that lie behind, Kamstach, who claim to lie behind both of these wars, are explaining to us that it's a very, very long thing. I'm not going to go into it, but I could if anybody ever wanted, how they have to start this World War III and end it by September 2026 for very deep religious reasons.
Ja.
I think we've done a good job, Marius.
Ja. Nee, en dan gaan ons volgende week hierdie tyd weer eens, dan gaan ons weer 'n lekker gesprek hê. Dan gaan ons 'n bietjie in diepe inspring in Israel en in Hamas en daai hele storie rondom dit. Dan kan ons dalk 'n bietjie meer soos jy nou sê, in diepte ingaan oor hoekom hulle sê moes hierdie oorlog begin het nou daar in Israel, Hamas en Rusland, Oekraïne en die derde wêreldoorlog en hoekom moet dit teen 'n sekere tyd klaargemaak word en so voort. Mense kan dalk 'n bietjie praat oor die rooi heffers en al hierdie tipe
yes.
dinge. Ja, en maar so ja, dit is dan vir volgende week op die spyskaart, dan gesels ons weer lekker daai tyd. Maar baie dankie vir jou tyd weer eens Simon, ek het weer eens baie vanaand geleer en ek hoop die luisteraars het dit ook geniet.
It's my pleasure, Marius. Thank you very much.
Allei. Lekker aand, Simon. Tot ziens.